Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Blog Talk Radio with Laura Alamieri. And today we're going to focus on the strategy session on where is the private money? Because honestly, this is one of the things I hear a lot from my students. It's like, great, I run across deals. There's a lot of potential out there, but I can't get the funding, the financing. So I want to kind of get you thinking in the right direction here and see where is the money. Well, first of all, let me go over what options are out there for investors nowadays and the difference in the pros and cons of each one. Investors used to be able to go to get bank financing. And bank financing, that's the bigger banks like Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and these are called conventional lenders. However, for today, in today's market, qualifying for these loans for investors is almost impossible. It's very, very difficult. Also, they put a certain limit of units that you can get into. So that's why it makes it particularly difficult for any investor to get into. And the paperwork and the loopholes that you have to jump in getting into to qualify for one of these loans makes it very challenging for an investor to even go through it. So bottom line, if you want to finance investment property, forget about going this route, okay? Flips, first of all, are out of the question, and they will not finance rehabs unless it's your personal residence, okay? And if you want to buy and hold, you probably won't qualify. So let's forget about the conventional lenders. Now, the local community banks and credit union, they are more lenient because they're funded by their investors. They're in-house. They have their own portfolio. That's why they're called portfolio lenders. And they will finance rehab projects. Usually they do that. And they will finance investment properties for buy and hold with no limits how many you can have. And they are much easier to deal with than conventional lenders. There is no problem there. The paperwork, the bureaucracy of going through underwriting is not as bad as larger lenders. However, they want you to still establish a relationship with them. So they want you to have what they call skin in the game. For example, if you want to finance a flip, they want you to have about anywhere from 10 to 20% down. Also, you do have to qualify on some type of credit. So, you know, they're looking at still a type of credit and your viability as an investor. And their loans are mostly commercial type loans with a balloon payment. They're not fully amortized for 30 years. But again, you know, it's a better route and you have a better chance if you are borderline and you have some established credit history to go with these lenders instead of conventional lenders. Now, hard money lenders, okay, these are not to be confused with private lenders, although sometimes they advertise themselves as private lenders. Now, if you're looking to buy and hold or anything long term, definitely don't go the hard money route. Although most of them will finance up to 2 years, but you know, they will eat up any of your potential profit in fees. So, you know, they're very easy to qualify with. You know, that's one of the pros. They don't care about your credit and income. They go based on the property mainly. And they're relatively quick to close. You know, usually they're in a couple of weeks. However, they're very, very expensive. Again, don't confuse them this with private money, hard money. It's called hard money because obviously they deal with a difficult situation. And it's not unusual to see these charging anywhere between 3 to 6 points up front. Then there are some points and fees at the end, plus the interest rate 10 to 16%. So, you know, as I said, and if you don't sell within a certain time period, let's say 6 months, they can tack more points into it. So it can get very, very expensive. So if you have to use hard money, and a lot of them will give you money for rehabs as well, use them short term. Hard money lenders make a profit by turning around their money pretty quickly, so therefore they encourage you to do short term. If you have to hold them 12 months or longer, it can get very, very expensive. So that brings us to private money lenders. Private money lenders, this is where really most of the investors nowadays need to focus their attention, because if they know how to work with private money, not only is it much easier to deal with and you can finance up to 100% of your deals, but also you make money as a wholesaler by using this money. So like I call the double dip system. You're still a wholesaler, so you make money on the flipping these properties, plus you make money on managing these private money lenders' deals, and I'm going to talk to you about here in a minute. So you get 100% financing on your deals. You get long-term money with no calls or reset or uploading of more points. You get flexible underwriting. They don't check your credit. And it's much cheaper, definitely, than hard money. And then, obviously, it's more of a one-on-one situation, how you deal with them. So you can see that this is very much more advantageous to somebody that wants to get into real estate without having to jump through all the loopholes, okay? So let's talk a little bit now, who are these private money people, okay? So private money is basically, first of all, why do you need private money? Okay, let's look at that. What would you do if you had basically a blank check and you can go anywhere and buy properties anytime? You just have to make a phone call to get this money. Well, first of all, you buy property directly at auction. This is what I started with. This was my motivation on getting into syndication and private money, because I know as a wholesaler, I was leaving a lot of money on the table by not being able to go to these auctions. And when you go to these foreclosure, when I talk about auctions, I talk about foreclosure auctions. These foreclosure auctions, basically they have, these foreclosure auctions, there are, you have to have cash, you know, same day cash. And you can go maybe once in a while, you know, you have your own money, that's fine. But you're not going to do the volume that you want to do, possibly just with your money, especially when you're starting out. So you can buy property directly at the auction on the courthouse steps. The purchase property of 100% financing, not only that, but you also can get money to fix up the property 100% financing, and you don't have to have any of your money or credit into it. That's the beauty of that. You have liquid ready funds, and therefore you can secure bigger discounts. Now you can go to the banks and their REO departments and so forth and say, hey, I can close in 3 days. You want $50,000 on the property, I give you $30,000, closing 3 days. And some banks will listen. Not all of them, but you know, some, especially the smaller banks, they will listen to somebody because, as we know, cash talks. Now you can fix and flip instead of just wholesaling. Now you have the money to fix this property, so therefore you can do that instead of just wholesaling these properties. And equity sharing using other people's money. This is a great thing again. You don't have to make monthly payments like you do with hard money or other type of loans. You can just tell them, hey, when I sell the property, I'll give you a share of the deal, which honestly is not much. And as I will talk to you in a minute, you're going to make as much or more than the private money lender. And then once you start having this pool of money that you can use for your own property, you can also become a hard money lender to yourself. So if you borrow this money at very good rates for doing your own deals, then you can broker the money out to other people and make a premium interest on that money. So as you see, there is a lot of possibility that you can do with private money. Now, also with private money, what type of properties can you buy? You can buy residential, single and multifamily, commercial, anything over 5 units is considered commercial, apartment buildings, offices, land, and like I said, foreclosures. That was really my specialty, going to the courthouse steps and buy foreclosures with private money. And of course, you can finance your own short sales and REO. So short-term, you're going to wholesale and flip. Short-term to me is anything less than a year, and long-term is buy and hold and hard money. Now, yes, long-term, you can go ahead and use private money to buy long-term. Excuse me, some of your investors that want to deal with you, they want to do long-term. They want to do the buy and hold scenario. They want to get that passive income coming to them consistently, and that's why they don't have a problem loaning to somebody 3, 5, or 10 years. They just want a percentage of those income coming in. That's kind of, their annuity of money coming in, okay? I want to briefly talk about the Dodd Frank Act. And I want to kind of clear some light in here before I get into more of the private money, because I know a lot of people bring it up and says, well, you know, how does it affect me as an investor? First of all, it applies only when investor sells to a buyer as owner-occupant with owner financing. So if you go ahead and use the money from your private lender and you sell to a buyer, and this buyer needs to use owner financing, meaning he wants you or your private lender to finance property for them, that's when it applies. But I can tell you right now, most of this private money that you're going to use, especially starting out, is going to be for short-term, flipping properties, okay? You might want to buy this property, fix it up, and sell it. You're not going to do any owner financing for anybody unless you get into the hard money scenario. And then if you get into the hard money scenario, there are some loopholes that you can use. Okay, first of all, you get a free pass or one deal a year rule. So basically, you know, anybody can do this. So if you want to own or finance it to somebody, you can do that one deal a year, okay? And you can do that to any person's estate and trust. So, you know, it's basically a straightforward deal. Balloon payment is okay in a year, and you have one deal you can do that way. Now, if you want to do three deals a year, you cannot ask for a balloon payment after a year, though. So you can own or finance three deals a year, and you can do this to people, estates, trusts, and corporations. The difference between this and the free pass is that the free pass, you can ask for a balloon payment to pay you off in a year. With the three deals rule, you cannot ask for any balloon payments. And then if you do more than three deals, you need to use a licensed mortgage originator. Now, my suggestion is if you get in a situation where you have private lenders that have no problem owner financing properties to other people through you, and then you get in the situation, you can become a licensed mortgage originator. It's nothing more difficult than getting a real estate license, so don't let that scare you. Anybody can become a licensed mortgage originator. You just have to get a license as you would be a real estate agent, okay? So the fact is, going back to the Dodd-Frank Act, is that most investors do not need to worry about the Dodd-Frank Act, you know, especially when you use private money to wholesale, fix, and flip. You don't have to do that. You're not owner financing anybody. You're just going to sell the stuff outright and move on to the next deal. And if you do get in a situation with your private lenders that you are originating or doing mortgages or owner financing, it's pretty easy to get a license as a mortgage originator, so don't think that's a big deal. Now, investors buying with lease options, owner financing, or subject to, this does not apply. So one of the questions I get asked a lot, well, what if I use a lease option to buy properties, or owner financing, or subject to? Well, that does not apply to you, okay? So if you have an agreement between you and some other private lender, again, this applies only to people buying properties to live in them, an owner-occupant, not as investment property. And most of you are going to be dealing with investment property, correct? So that's why it doesn't apply to you. Now, rent and lease options qualify as proving borrower's viability. That means that if you do the 1 year or three deals rules and you owner financing to somebody, as long that they have to prove that they're viable as buyers, so they, you know, showing that they made a good income or rental history with them, that would be enough to get them to qualify under the Dodd-Frank Act. So with this said, I just want to kind of summarize that, you know, most of it likely won't apply to you unless you decide that you want to become somebody who is going to own or finance properties to people, okay? And at that token, if you do one deal a year with a balloon payment, it's okay. You can do up to three deals a year, but you cannot ask for a balloon payment after that. You know, you have to amortize it. Or you can become a loan originator if this is what is going to be the core of your business, so that you can do as many deals as you want. And as I said, becoming a loan originator, mortgage originator, is not a big deal. It's like getting an agent real estate license. Now, you know, if you're buying yourself using subject to or lease options as an investor, not to live in yourself, it doesn't apply to you, so don't worry about it. Okay, so I kind of wanted to summarize that a little bit. Now, one of the things is there are plenty of funds available for you to tap into as far as private money. Capital is available and ready, okay? And the people like you that can tap into this money are in high demand because, as you can see from what the last few minutes we talked about, people are running out of options here if they want to buy investment property or if they want to buy, you know, for rentals. There are running out of options. The banks are not financing as easily as they used to. So that's why private money is in demand. But it's like I said, the good thing to think about is that there is plenty of it, okay? So don't think that there is no money out there. Now, there are agreements that you have to make. You know, and the SEC is very clear about things that you can do, cannot do. However, there are some loopholes that you can use as an investor to do things without having to worry about heavy reporting through the SEC. Some of these rules, for example, if you use money from the state within the state, it's called intrastate commerce. So as long as you use the money, let's say from Illinois, to finance property that are bought and sold in Illinois, you're okay. Okay, now if you start using money from Illinois to finance property in Missouri, Indiana, or anywhere else, then the SEC doesn't like that. However, once in a while, if you run across a property, as long as it's not on the normal practice of the business, you can still use that money to finance property in other states. However, as I said, as a rule, you should use money to do deals within the state. Also, you cannot advertise. They don't like that you advertise the fact that to people that you don't know that, you know, you're going to make them a certain return on investment. You can't promise any return on anybody's money. If you want to get people to educate people, become private money lender and invite them to a meeting, you have to be very general about it. Says you're going to have a meeting, you're going to explain some great opportunities within real estate investing and so forth. Now, also when they come to the meeting, you can get into the details about what they get out of it, how this works, and so forth. However, you have to respect what they call a rule of 345. You have to have at least 3 points of contact with them within 45 days, an email count. That means if you don't know these people, the first time you see them, number one, yes, that counts. Second, they say you follow up with an email, how did you like the meeting? Third time, you can have them for coffee or lunch. Now you have 3, and this has to be spread over 45 days' time. And then on the fourth time, you can sign enough to be a private money lender. Okay? So that's why the rule of 345. And there are some other little rules here and there. So as long as you know how to work with these rules, then you don't have to worry about the heavy reporting with the SEC. So who are these lenders? Now let's get into the core of that. Who are these lenders? Who are these private money lenders? Private money lenders, like I said, first of all, don't confuse them with hard money. Hard money, they're more institutionalized. They're like insurance companies, hedge funds. They're people that have a pool of money that are already basically doing type of investments. What you're looking for is the people, the individuals, they might have some capital. It doesn't have to be liquid capital. It can be cash in the bank in the form of savings, but it can also be lines of credit. People have lines of credit on their house. They have 401ks. They have IRAs. They can become self-directed IRAs. They have retirement plans, insurance that you can borrow against. So, you know, you can see that people can tap into all kinds of money out there. Your job is to educate people to tap into that money. Okay, your job is to pull it out of them, to make them think where they have the money. So how do you do that? The best thing is come up with a list of potential people that you think might have the money. You most likely don't know for sure who has the money. People don't go around and say, oh yeah, I have $300,000 I can tap into my retirement account. Most likely the people don't. So think of people maybe have worked in the corporation environment for many years or have a very good job or so forth and invite them to an informal meeting. And during this informal meeting, I have a presentation that I show them that kind of tells them, okay, this is how it's going to work. This is how the number is going to break. It helps if you've done some deals in the past. You don't have to have done so many, but a couple of deals so that you can show them from real life what the numbers have looked like. I bought this property for $50,000. I sold it for $70,000, and this is my closing statement with a profit. Helps if you have a couple of those. Or if you are from a financial background, maybe you have worked in the bank or in the mortgage industry, on the title company industry, something that they feel reassured. If you're not been investing, at least you have worked in some type of field that's close to real estate investing, okay? So you get them into a room, so you invite these people, and one of the things you can do also, talk to other professionals in the industry. They might know people. It can be a real estate agents, mortgage brokers, title company. They know people. They know people, they think, okay, you know, they know I might have money. So you partner with them and you come up with a list, 50 to 100 people. You send out a general invitation, like I said about earlier, you can't really be specific on what you're going to promise them. You send them a general invitation, you make them come to a meeting, and at this meeting, you have to lay it out for them and break it down, what is in for them, how the numbers going to work. The main thing they want to understand is, you know, are they protected? Is their investment protected? Okay. The fact is that they're opting to go with an investment in real estate with you instead of going into a stock brokerage agreement with somebody else. They have to see the benefit. Well, the benefit could be that you're turning around their money pretty fast, that they're getting a higher return on investment, that it's more secure than stocks, less volatile. Those are things you have to kind of break into. And as I said, I have a presentation, and also I hand out frequently a Q&A handout that kind of tackles those questions before they even bring them up. So it answers them, you know, everything that they might come up with and say, okay, yeah. So I know, I catch them before they even bring them up to me. So that's what your job is to go out there, get these people, educate them into an aspect of how to do this, and then you'll be surprised once you pass through and they understand the concept and they feel that the investment is protected, and that's where all the paperwork you have them sign, transparency is very important, you know, show them a couple of examples from you or another investor. That's why sometimes it's good you partner with other people that have been doing it before if you haven't, and they can bring to the table during the meeting their own experience. You will be surprised how many people will actually sign up. When I did my first meeting, what happened is I was me and another mortgage broker. We invited 60 people between the two of us, and from any walk of life. You know, it doesn't have to be that some of them, we didn't know if they had any money. You know, we just invited them because they had bought real estate here and there, and we assumed they probably had some experience in the business. And so out of the 60 people, 25 came to the meeting. And out of 25, 6 signed up that night. On top of that, we charge $1,000 each for the people who agreed to do this because we want them to make sure that they have some money or skin in the game. Because a lot of people will say, oh, yes, sure, I like the idea, I'll do it. But then when you call them and you come down with properties that they want, that you would like for them to purchase or finance, they don't do it. But I found out if they have some money into it and they're serious about it, they will actually look for you. You know, they will want to do the deals because obviously they already have some money. They already put their signature on paper, okay? So that's what I say. That night I did it. 6 people gave me $1,000 each. So I walked out of the meeting with $6,000 plus several $100,000 in available capital to go out and buy property. So what did I do with that? Then, you know, there is proposals that I have them sign. There is a whole system in place, obviously, that, you know, once they have agreed, there is a proposal, you send it to them about potential properties that are coming up on the market. They sign the proposal so you know that you have the money to back you up on these deals. You go out there. You go to auctions. You go to REOs. And then as soon as you get the property under contract or you win an auction, you call them up and say, hey, I got this property. I need you to wire $50,000 or $100,000 to the bank. Sometime it would be a couple of investors partnering together. You know, most of the time, even the investors, they did have the money. They didn't like to do all the deal by themselves. They would like to partner with somebody else. Again, that's your job as a syndicator to, you know, put all this together. But this is the beauty of it because this is where you make your money. So your responsibility will be to find the properties, to analyze the deals, to supervise construction if needed, then selling or securing long-term financing and managing the syndication group. Like I said, transparency is very important. You're communicating with them. Let them know what's going on. And making sure you're the point of contact is very, very important. But your fees are tremendous, okay? There are fees that you make throughout these deals from beginning to finish. There are acquisition fees. Basically, you going out there looking for properties or going to the court steps at the auction, you get paid anywhere from 1 to 5%, okay, whatever agreement you had. My personal agreement was $1,000 plus 1%. Okay, so 1 to 5% or a flat fee. Brokerage fee, if you're a licensed real estate agent, obviously when you buy REOs, there are fees involved, commissions, and when you sell this property, you charge a commission to your private lender. Say, hey, I've been selling this property. So if you sell it and you have to split your commission, we'll say we have another agent, each one makes 3%, or if you sell it in-house, you charge 6%. Then also there's asset management fees. This is for basically you keep an eye on the property until it sells, right? Somebody has to do it. You're going to do it. That's usually about 3% of gross revenues or asset cost. So maintenance and construction fees. Now, let's say you do fix and flip, not just flip. You're actually going to rehab this property, and that will be part of your proposal that you need the money to rehab. Well, let's say it needs you $25,000 to rehab this property. You're a general contractor. Now you say to them, I need $30,000 to rehab this property because honestly you want some cushion in there in case you run over budget. And the other thing is that's your compensations for construction, general contractor fees. So, you know, there's money to be made there too. And also you're making money on the profit on sale or disposition as a wholesaler. Now you don't have any of your money or credit in it, but you still make money at the end. This is the beauty. So 8 to 12% usually goes to the investor. You make 10 to 50% of the equity as a syndicator. And trust me, nobody has a problem with this. Okay? They're so happy that you give them 8 to 12%. Now I'm saying 8 to 12%, not yearly, 8 to 12% of the investment. So if they give you $100,000 to do a deal, your construction and purchase, you're going to give them back, let's say, $112,000. You sell it in 3 months, you sell it a year from now, it doesn't matter. Whatever percentage you agree, that goes to them. As I say, it's a percentage of the equity. It's not really a percentage of like a loan. You're not borrowing the money. You're not making monthly payments. Be generous with them, okay? Overpay. If you tell them you're going to give them 8%, give them 9 or 10 if you can at the end of the deal. Try to always overdo it because, as I said, this is where you're going to establish yourself and they're going to go ahead and keep you giving you more and more money. Okay? And then they're going to refer other people because, honestly, after those original 6 people, I never advertised anywhere. They were word of mouth. We grew up to 16 people altogether. I never had any advertising. It was word of mouth. So that's why it's very important that you over-deliver on what you say, especially when it comes to paying them. Okay? So you can see that all these fees, at the end of the day, you're actually making more money than the private money themselves. So this is the beauty of it, is the private money is basically, going back and summarizing this, the private money is people. It's people that have assets, that have money, that have retirement accounts, lines of credits, and so forth. Trust me, there are people out there that have money that are untapped, just sitting there. They're just looking for somebody that can make them see and understand that what this money can do for them. Okay, they can tap into it. Their main concern is security. Is this money going to be safe? Is it going to give me a decent return of investment for me putting it out there? Are you the person that knows what he's doing? And this is where you have to show yourself. There is presentations, there's material, there is paperwork, all this that you can have him sign, and this is where you're going to come through as transparent and as a professional that know how to get this done. Now, if you want to know more about it, I do have a course on syndication, okay? I do give it out only a couple times a year. You can go to lauralamieri.com/syndication-program. So Laura Lameri, that's laura.com/syndication, syndication dash program. And I say a lot more how this program is and everything you get for it. Again, it's a program I do only a couple times a year. It's the only program like that I've seen on the internet, especially at that really special price. Okay, great. Thanks a lot. I hope this kind of clarifies where is the private money. Every Thursday, 12 noon, we are going to have a focus strategy session. So make sure you're here next week on Thursday for the next strategy session. And thanks for spending this time for me. Have a good day.